regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad with me on the program today. Going to be talking with Chuck Michel, head of the California Rifle and Pistol Association, co-founder of the 2A Law Center, one of the sharpest Second Amendment legal minds around. Good news out of California, where a three-judge panel on the Ninth Circuit has not only said that a California gun control law, well, actually a speech law related to our Second Amendment rights, is likely unconstitutional, but actually instructed the lower court to go further in providing injunctive relief. Again, this is from the Ninth Circuit, which rarely happens. So let's delve into this with Chuck Michel, head of the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Take a look and a listen. Chuck, thanks very much for coming to the program. It's good to see you, sir.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I love when we get a chance to talk about good news out of the Ninth Circuit. And we've actually got a couple of cases where that is the fact, right? So let's start with this case at Junior Shooting Sports versus Bonta. Now, this is not technically a Second Amendment case, but it is, I mean, it implicates our right to keep and bear arms because this is an attempt by the state of California to chill gun-related speech, right?
Yes. Well, it's also a Second Amendment case. We brought both challenges. But the primary ruling came out, you know, if you have a fundamental right that's being affected by a speech regulation, mm-hmm. that heightens the review, the standard of review that the court applies in the First Amendment context. So that worked to our benefit to some degree. But putting this all in context, the state of California and other anti-gun owner states, most of their laws are a pretext to try and limit the number of gun owners, make it as hard to buy one, as hard to use one, as expensive as possible, as hard to get it repaired. You know, so they want to ban gun stores, ban gun shows, ban gun ranges, do everything they can to eliminate, i.e. murder, the gun culture, mm-hmm. so that they take the power, the political power, away from Second Amendment advocacy groups and individual gun owners. So this was part of an effort to wipe out junior shooting sports, youth shooting, so that there wouldn't be the next generation of people, of folks who understand the value of self-defense, the value of the Second Amendment. Oh, and let's not forget the fun of going to the range and competing, or just going there for, you know, not even a formal competition, just going out and having a good time at the range. They don't want youth to be exposed to that. So they passed a law that made it illegal to do anything that would promote a youth shooting program, any kind of advertising that might be attractive to minors, whatever that means.
Right.
They wanted to ban it. So we immediately challenged that. We joined with Second Amendment Foundation and Gun Owners of California in our suit. We filed it immediately after that law passed. We got an injunction. We didn't get an injunction from the trial court. We went to the Ninth Circuit. We got an injunction in the Ninth Circuit. That got sent back down to the trial court. And then the state plays these games and says, oh, the injunction you got is only for part of the law. All these other promotional activities are still illegal. So they could still scare. Basically, it scares all the groups away. Junior Shooting Sports Magazine stopped mailing to California. Because they couldn't do anything to promote youth shooting sports. All the ranges had to take down any signs that might be attractive to minors. I mean, it was a nightmare for developing and promoting youth shooting programs. So the state plays this game. Oh, that injunction didn't apply to it all. And the trial court judge went along with that from the first Ninth Circuit opinion. Said, yeah, that only bans one section. So we had to go back to the Ninth Circuit and say, could you please explain that your ruling applies to the entire law? And that's the ruling we just got the other day. The oral argument in this case was a joy to behold, as the three-judge panel just tore the state's attorney apart for even trying to play these kinds of hair-splitting games to try and save some of this law so that they could still try and stop junior shooting.
That is
finally won. The whole law is knocked out. Now we got to go back down to the trial court, though, and get it finalized.
Okay, so yeah, so that's the next step, right? The panel basically told the trial court, no, the entirety of the law needs to be enjoined, right? So that'll be the next step. But again, this case has not yet been tried on the merits, right? The injunction was granted by the Ninth Circuit because you're likely to prevail on the merits, but we still have to have oral arguments and everything in this case, right?
We still have to move to this was a preliminary injunction. Okay. We have to get a permanent injunction and judgment against the state so it locks it in that this law is done once and for all. Okay. As it should be. It should be dead. It should have been dead on arrival. But this is what, and this was Newsom and the politicians in Sacramento.
Yep.
This is what they're really all about.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember talking with you when this first passed, and there were junior shooting leagues that, like, well, we can't operate, right? Because right. We can't display sponsors. We don't know what we're going to do, right? So, I mean, and that was the immediate impact here. It was, as you say, to prevent that next generation from growing up with an appreciation for our right to keep and bear arms. And if you can choke off that next generation, well, there goes gun advocacy, right?
I mean, this was so broad and so terrifying for Bass Pro was taking teddy bears with my dad is a hunter logos on them off the shelves. That's how far people were afraid this was going to go. And it created a private right of action so that gun control groups could sue anybody who did this. So basically, it was like a bait for anybody who wants to ban guns to file their own lawsuit and try and get damages from anybody who dared to promote youth shooting. It was a terrifying law, and CRPA and GOC and SAF stepped up, and we are now, I think, going to finally knock it out so we can get this. Get junior shooting sports back on track, because we really, I mean, there's a lot of junior shooters. There's a lot of, sporting clays, target shoot, whatever. Hunter's Ed was jeopardized by this thing. Hunter education classes. So, yeah, it's a. Excuse me.
Yeah. Listen, I'm allergic to these gun control bills, too. I get upset.
Exactly. I sneeze a lot in California. There's a lot to be allergic to. A lot of anti-gun pollen in the air.
Well, let's talk about another one of these cases. I ran across a story the other day about a cornerback for the New York Jets. I don't know why this is. I guess it's newsworthy because it's New Jersey, right? So TMZ ran this story about this this guy. He went to a gun store in New Jersey. He bought three guns. He bought a rifle, a shotgun, and a pistol. And I noted that he's allowed to do that under New Jersey law, but he couldn't buy two pistols because New Jersey has a gun rationing law in place, right? One handgun every 30 days. And I noted that California has an even more restrictive law. It's their 1 in 30 law basically is one firearm within 30 days, right? Or are there some exceptions? There may be like some exceptions, but for the most part, I believe it's basically a 1 in 30 law, right?
Right.
But that, too, has come under scrutiny by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And once again, gun owners have come out on top.
Yeah. And that's a really good ruling, because the fight that we've been having ever since Bruin came down, the fight that we've been having in all the anti-gun owner courts and even in some of the moderate courts, because they follow some of the logic that another court is, how do you apply the Bruin methodology? Step one, it's not a test. Step one is, does the right to keep and bear arms cover the conduct? It's not just about hardware. It's not just about a specific arm, but there's a fight about whether or not a magazine is an arm or a suppressor is an arm or other accessories or parts can be arms. And then if it is covered by that, then the burden shifts to the state to prove that there was some historical law that would indicate that the founders would have tolerated the modern day law, even with the Second Amendment protections in place. That has been something that the Ninth Circuit has been playing games with. For example, in the Duncan case, they said a magazine is not an arm. So it never gets to the second step.
Mm-hmm.
And so the nice thing about this one gun in 30 ruling, striking down the law that restricts one buyers from one, to one gun a month, is that it properly applied the Bruin analysis, the Bruin methodology. That's the battle we've been having. That's what we need the Supreme Court to come down hard on these courts that are twisting the language of the Bruin decision to suit their own ends, which is they're biased. They want to uphold gun control laws.
Right. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, we've seen some courts say, well, you know, the Second Amendment protects the right to keep and bear. It doesn't say anything about acquiring a firearm. So you can have all of these commercial restrictions and you don't violate the Second Amendment. Right. That we've seen that argument laid out. And this panel said, no, that's ridiculous. I mean, if you have the right to keep, you have the right to bear, you have to have the corresponding right to acquire.
Right? Yes. And gun stores have to have a right to be set up to sell them. And, you know, yeah, it's all this. And you have the right to go to a range and you have the right to hunt. And it's not just about self-defense. That's the other thing.
Right.
Limited to.
Yep.
It's about any lawful conduct with a gun, with a firearm. You know, self-defense happened to be what was at issue in Heller and Bruin, because it was guns in, first in your home in Heller and then in public in Bruin for self-defense.
Right.
But they never said it only applies to self-defense.
No, you're right. I mean, there've been multiple judges that have made that argument, right? That, well, if this gun isn't in common use for self-defense, it's not protected by the Second Amendment, which, I mean, is absurd. I mean, that would basically suggest that, okay, handguns, since they're the most common, right, firearm used in self-defense, they're protected. But your bolt-action rifle, your, you know, over-under shotgun, they're not. You know, 10 years ago, the gun control advocates were saying, okay, maybe bolt-action rifles are protected. Maybe over-under shotguns are protected. But handguns aren't protected by the Second Amendment.
Right.
Now you've got judges saying the exact opposite, right? Or at least, you know, kind of insinuating that the exact opposite is true.
Yeah, logic and reason are fungible quantities with the gun ban lobby. You know, they can twist it to adapt to whatever circumstance and pull out junk science to justify whatever, you know, their baloney statistics to justify whatever policy they're advocating behind the scenes, which is essentially civilian disarmament. We started off, they want to eradicate the gun culture. They really don't want anybody to be able to get a gun. You know, it's a Barney Fife thing where you can have one gun locked up in your house, unloaded, and you can have one bullet in your pocket. You know,
they
minimize it, diminish it to nothing, and then make it too expensive to get. So people give up. And that's what happens. The red tape chases a lot of people away from gun ownership.
Yeah. And they're doing it to gun owners. They're doing it to gun sellers. They're doing it to gun makers. I've got a story coming up at Bearing Arms later today about this bill that's been proposed in Illinois called the Rifle Act, which would require every gun maker in California to basically pay a bond before they could sell a firearm. And then if one of their guns is used in a crime, even if the gun's stolen, you know, even if the gun was 10 years old, if it's used in a crime, they're on the hook for, you know, medical bills, for legal bills. Now, again, what gun company is going to sell a firearm in Illinois if that's the restriction that they are under, right?
So that's the game they started years ago with the municipal lawsuits, trying to hold gun manufacturers liable for the criminal misuse of their products.
Mm-hmm.
And they twisted stuff like one of the guns had a, you know, if you touch a gun with moist fingertips and you don't wipe it off, you can get rust spots on your gun. And so they were advertising fingerprint resistant, right? And so they twist that to, oh, they're doing this so criminals won't leave their prints on the gun so they can buy the gun and not leave fingerprints at the crime scene or on the gun. You know, this is the distorted spin that they use to try and demonize guns and gun owners.
Yeah.
But expanding liability is all part of the way to scare people away from gun ownership, make them liable. Think they might be liable for, you know, somebody stealing their gun and misusing it.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we just touched the surface of what you guys are doing, the California Rifle and Pistol Association, as well as the Second Amendment Law Center. I would encourage folks, go to crpa.org to keep up to date with all of not just the legislative stuff, but the legal stuff as well. To ALC, again, you guys are filing amicus briefs. You guys are involved in a ton of Second Amendment litigation across the country. So, thank you, as always, for carving out a couple minutes of your time.
Can I make two more quick points first?
Yes, of course.
Folks should take a look at the CRPA website and see what we did this year in Sacramento. We knocked out a lot of bad stuff. We still have a few, but CRPA and Gun Owners of California are working together in Sacramento, knocking this stuff. And we actually got a pro-gun bill passed for the first time in decades that clarifies the security measures that an FFL has to have, because they were giving conflicting fire code and penal code requirements for safe doors. So we finally cleared that up so a lot of gun retailers can still do business. So that's on the legislative side. then I know some of your wonks that are watching you are going to know, are going to say, well, wait a minute, you won this junior shooting sports in the Ninth Circuit. They're just going to appeal, the state's going to appeal it en banc, right, to the 11 judge panel. Well, they did that the first time around, and not one judge voted to take that case en banc. So it's very unlikely that there will be an en banc review of the junior shooter sports ruling. I think that one's in the can for gun owners.
Okay.
But that is very thank you for the plug for both CRPA and 2ALC. We, you know, we charge nonprofit rates very below, well below market, but it still takes a lot of time. State loves to waste our time, make us jump through all these procedural hoops that don't get to the ultimate issue. They want to stall. You know, that's the game they play, run up, try and run up our bill. And so it still takes time, and we still need support from everybody who cares. You know, it's a historic time for the Second Amendment. When you send a buck into CRPA or 2ALC, you are a part of history.
Absolutely. Chuck, thanks as always for your time, sir. Look forward to doing this again very soon.
Please do. Love it, Cam. Thank you.
My thanks to Chuck, not only for joining us on the program, but again, for all of the outstanding work that the California Rifle and Pistol Association and the 2A Law Center doing around the country. All right, and let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Louisiana. The headline, man on probation for gun charges arrested for July 4th attempted murder. Not just any gun charges, by the way. If this was just, you know, a mere possession case, it'd be one thing, right? But no, as it turns out, according to authorities, 23-year-old Randolph Harris was placed on active probation in March of last year after taking a plea bargain for being a felon in possession of a firearm. He ended up taking a plea to attempted felon in possession of a firearm. I guess felon in attempted possession of a firearm. I don't know. Anyway, the judge in Louisiana at that point gave Williams a or gave Harris a suspended 7-year prison sentence and placed him on probation for 3 years. A hearing's already been scheduled to take place next month for the judge to consider revoking that probation now that Harris again has been arrested and accused with attempted first-degree murder, attempted criminal damage to property, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Again, this happened in Baton Rouge, Louisiana on July 4th. Deputies say that Harris and three other men were caught on a surveillance camera pulling up to a store in the area. Harris filmed going into the store after putting a handgun with a magazine, extended magazine, in his waistband. And then again, as he allegedly walked out of the store with the gun tucked under his arm. The arrest documents state that Harris and the other men were initially driving away from the parking lot, but stopped and pulled back in when they saw another driver show up there at the same location. The arrest documents state that Harris and the other men sat and watched as the other driver entered the store with two young children and another adult. And then, as they exited the store, Harris allegedly began to shoot at the two adults and two kids as they, again, were leaving. A nearby bystander was hurt, not by a bullet, but maybe a shrapnel or glass when their car was hit by gunfire. Apparently, neither the two adults nor the two children were hurt, thankfully, but it sounds like that was not the intent, right? The intent actually was to harm those four individuals, and a man who could have been sentenced to 7 years in prison last March was instead out in the streets and able to allegedly participate in this crime. Yeah, no. Today's Armed Citizen story from Redmond, Washington, where I don't like this headline. Redmond employee shoots apparent car thief. Well, yes and no. It was an apparent car thief who was targeted, but not because they were trying to steal a car. KIRO in Seattle says that a employee of a business in Redmond, Washington, reportedly saw a man trying to steal his car and confronted him, but didn't shoot him. During the encounter, though, the suspect became aggressive, advanced on that individual who legally possessed a handgun, and then drew his firearm and pulled the trigger, striking the suspect once in the abdomen, which would be a case of self-defense, right? This is not a defense of property. This is not, oh, I was trying to stop him from getting away with my car. This was, I was trying to protect my life because I said, hey, stop stealing my car, and he came at me. No other shots fired. The employee reported to be cooperating with the police. The investigation is still ongoing. But again, if other evidence matches up to what the victim here is saying, the gun owner should not be facing any charges whatsoever. Finally, today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, an off-duty Border Patrol officer in Michigan who saved a man from drowning in the St. Mary's River just a couple of days ago. It was the 5th of July. A man was pulling his two daughters in a tube on the river. He's in a boat. They're in the tube behind him. When he fell out of the boat, apparently did not have a life jacket on, so he was struggling to stay above the water. He was calling out for help. That's when the off-duty agent heard him, was able to paddle over in his canoe, put a life vest on him, and then pulled him to shallow water. The agent and the man then waved down a boat that was in the area to come search for the two girls. They were found on shore, thankfully, reunited with their dad. They said that they had fallen out of their tube, but they were able to swim to shore. Sault Ste. Marie police officers found the boat that the man was in a short time later, crashed into a seawall. Detroit Sector Acting Chief Patrol Agent Javier Geronimo Jr. said in a statement, the heroic agent did not hesitate to take action, turning this potentially tragic event into a positive one, saying that the agents are always on duty when it comes to public safety, and noted that this was actually the second time in recent weeks that agents from the Detroit sector have saved someone from drowning. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, on duty or off, we thank that unnamed Border Patrol agent for doing the right thing and saving the day. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow, but be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, including what appears to be a politically targeted attack on a conservative Trump supporter in Seattle, Washington, and an attack, by the way, that none of Washington's many gun control laws stopped. But those stories and more for you. We'll be back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.